I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hello.
Mr. Chairman, I move to, it was with great happiness that I moved to approve the Brown County check sheet for December 11th, 2018, payroll checks manuals in the amount of $717.75.
Second.
Items of note, Tom?
No, that's just a...
Item of note.
It's an employee deposit into their ACH account, right? So it's not even county money.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
So, items of note from yesterday's work session. We met with the county manager, had a legal update, had an accounting update, planning department update, human services update, building department update, and environmental health update, which the environmental health update, we had a presentation on the retail food program and the change in regulations there a little bit.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve consent agenda item A.
Second.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 They say you'll want clue number two.
God hell. You know, Netflix has been a big problem with all of this stuff.
But even that, I said, 6-8 megabits per second.
Good morning.
Morning.
So... I am here to request your consideration approval on the resolution designating our 2019 holidays. Nothing has changed from previous years, unless you want to add.
No.
No?
Let me think about it.
All right. So we have 9 holidays.
Resolution's 080.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve resolution number 2018-080.
Second.
That's the same number of days that we've had this year.
Yes. Same.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So since you sent all those out already, what would have happened if we'd had that? Would have changed that.
I would have made changes to your calendar. My second item is in 2016 we approved the grant, the COSI grant, which is that Colorado Department of Higher Education, and an agreement was signed at the time. Between us signing CMC and Glenwood sending it to the state, it got lost. So they have not been able to get reimbursed for those funds because the state does not have a signed agreement. So we signed the 17-18 about a couple of months ago. So this is basically a retroactive. You have already approved it and signed it, and you're signing it again for so that they can get their funds.
I'm happy to make the motion to do that. I wonder if it's even necessary.
You were the chair at the time, and your name is still on here.
I would agree with that, too, so go ahead and, yeah.
Do you think I should just go ahead and make
just
the motion?
Just dot the I and the other cross the
I feet. Think that's probably good.
Okay, yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve and authorize the chairman's signature on the 2016-17 grant agreement on behalf of Rouse County as a partner to a Colorado Opportunity Scholarship Matching Challenge Scholarship as submitted by Colorado Mountain College.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 So I'll have the, today's the 11th, I'll have the new one coming up soon again.
So, you know, sometime, we don't need to do it now or whatever, but... Who did you call? They call you?
They called us, yeah.
So we'd like to have an update from them.
From them?
Yeah, as to where the money went.
How it's used.
What kind of John Q. Public, and not necessarily names, but how the money's getting, how the money's getting spent.
I can have a request and see if they can have a local person come in and do it, since the I deal with the person in Glenwood. So, cool. Thank you, Dave.
Hey, Tom.
Where are you going on a hut trip?
This year, one I've never, like the only one I've never been to, which is Betty Bear.
Okay. I went there years ago.
I'm back. Yeah.
What's your name? Eben. Eben, I'm Tim.
Nice to meet you.
So, you guys received the ambulance licensing packet, which is pretty much the same as we've had in years past. The only difference is that we've got a new ambulance provider, EMS Unlimited, and they had their ambulance inspected, and it met the county requirements for the equipment on board. So there you have it, and you saw Eben's packet and his business plan in there. The one thing that the inspector gave me, and I just got this, I think it was day before yesterday, but he put a note in here to the EMS council, but I'm going to read it to you so you know what we're going to be working on. There's a couple things we're working on, but I'll read this to you and I'll talk a little bit more. One of his paragraphs says, given the limitations in the radio communication system used by Event Medical Solutions Unlimited, the council should consider a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners, in keeping with the board's obligation to protect the public health, safety, and welfare, that the ambulance service be issued, that the ambulance service license issued to Event Medical Solutions Unlimited be limited to interfacility ambulance transport services only. And
what's that mean?
That means basically to issue the permit.
So who's this from?
This is from the inspector, Eric.
And so,
Schmidt.
Who the hell is he in? Why does he have the authority to say that?
He's giving that recommendation to the EMS Advisory Council, which will come back to you, saying the EMS Advisory Council has this recommendation to the county commissioners. Up to you. You're the authority having. You can.
And we get what authority is delegated to us by the state legislature.
Right.
And I don't know that that's included in there.
Yes, it is.
It is allowed that we can pick and choose who gets to serve our customers, our clientele?
It is up to you to determine how you want to ensure public safety.
Is that letter in our packet?
No, I just got it a couple of days ago. So that's
can
why
I make some copies?
You certainly can, and I'll be happy to give it to you. The other thing, which I'll segue into, and then we can come back to that, the state has revised their directives or legislation to counties on ambulance licensing, and basically what it is doing is some housekeeping on stating that ambulances need to meet some safety requirements. In other words, they have to meet some standards on how they're built. I guess there were some issues that another state came up against, I think it was West Virginia, where maybe people were pulling a truck into their backyard and mounting a milk truck on the back, milk box on the back, and making an ambulance out of it. And they're like, well, that's not quite what we want to see happen here. So there's basically some housekeeping stuff that you will need to update your ambulance licensing regulations. And with that, I think maybe we'll come back to this discussion, and having Eben here is a good time, and Eben's going to meet with me on the 19th to talk about how his service might interface with first response agencies when he's available, if we get into a situation where we're overstretched and we need to call on other resources.
So these housekeeping items that you just mentioned don't apply to what we're doing today?
Not today, no.
It'll be for next year?
2019.
Okay.
We're currently working under the same regulations.
I mean, they would apply in 2020.
Or in 2019.
Because we're doing a 2019 approval here.
You're right, Tim. It would be 2020.
Before, okay.
Relicensed.
So limited to inter-facility ambulance transport services only. That means that he could just pick people up at hospitals to transfer them to other hospitals?
Or? Yeah, that's what his business plan is right now.
Oh, okay. So I saw that you're in Rio Blanco, Moffitt, Route, and Grand, so you couldn't necessarily take someone from our local hospital and transport them to the Front Range?
No, so we're hopefully today licensed to transport. So we have to be permitted and licensed in the county where the patient originates.
So starting
here in Route is our first goal. We go to the Moffitt County Commissioners on the 21st. And then through mutual aid agreements, we're able to not be permitted in a county, but to assist the local agency. So I have a mutual aid agreement with Meeker Fire to go to Pioneer Medical Center without being licensed in Rio Blanco, and the same is in progress with the EMS Chief in Grand County that would allow us to be permitted.
Okay, but if you do have a patient that originates here in Route County at the hospital here, can you transport them to the Front Range in the ambulance?
If you tell me I can. Yes.
If you license him
today.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Then tomorrow or tonight,
okay,
you can do a transfer.
Even with this restriction?
Yeah, and that's what that restriction
is
talking about.
So what is the restriction? The limitations of the radio system.
He can't
explain
pick, he
that.
Can't
he doesn't have a radio. He
road.
Doesn't have a radio system that interfaces. He currently does not have a radio system or a license to use our system, which is an 800 megahertz system that our Rock County communication systems use, or that we use on our. He doesn't.
And so is that required? And did the council?
No.
Did the council? It's not required.
Right.
So why is he even bringing it up then if it's not required?
No, he is. He's. I
no,
think what this is saying.
Why is Eric bringing it up when it's not required to have the 800?
He's talking to the EMS Advisory Council saying that when we look at revising our, when you look at revising your ambulance licensing regulations, that you may want to look at what's in the best interest of public safety as a whole. So.
What I hear from Evan is it's a non-issue because you're only planning to do inter-facility transfers.
Well, our long-range goal is to be able to support the Depot Fire Department, Rest Route, South Route, anything in the county.
Through a mutual aid relationship.
Mutual aid, emergency responses. Eventually, we apply for our permit to use the radios. It's just... it's a process to
okay.
get that moving.
And so then you said that the council did not discuss this.
No, this just came out.
Because it says the unlimited, unlimited, the council should consider a recommendation.
Yeah.
And you guys, and this just...
This just came out. I'm just giving you a heads up on it. I'm not asking you to do anything different today. I'm not telling you to do anything different today. I'm just giving you a... notice that you may see some information coming back from the EMS Advisory Council in February because our next meeting is January 21st. We'll be coming back to you talking about updating the ambulance licensing rules and regulations. And when those get updated and you agree to those updates, you'll need to adopt them through a resolution, which you did in 2009.
I'm telling you, this upsets me. This really, I mean, we support competition, and you know, it's a free world out here. If private enterprise wants to come in and compete with, you know, tax subsidies entity, this bothers me personally. I don't like this at all. I mean, these things happen all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they happen. They're
all over the country, local governments ensure that they have a consistent public safety. Because I'll tell you what's happened in other places, Doug, is we've had other places have had private services come in.
And then they're not up to standard.
And when they realize they aren't making a profit, they pull out and they leave a gap.
Yeah, and I understand that too.
So one is there's not a consistency in a high standard in some of those communities. I'm not saying they're all that way. I'm just saying that there's some that way. So there's probably a good reason for you to be proactive rather than reactive in your ambulance regulations.
So, but you're applying for access to that radio system, right?
I'm applying for access to the radio system, but I'm completely on board with I would never enter into any attempt to do emergency response, not in a facility.
stuff because it is not.
Okay.
It's not the best interest.
And then if he did ever get access to that radio system, that restriction would go away, right?
Well, that restriction isn't a restriction until we make a restriction.
Right. He just mentioned that. That's one kind of consideration that we may want to look at. I think there's other considerations that the EMS Council as a whole needs to consider. I'm not in any kind of adversarial relationship with Evan or his company. I'm just saying I'm providing you with some preliminary information that we probably want to look at, you probably want to look at from a public safety standpoint, whether we're talking about Evan or we're talking about another service.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do any of our current ambulance providers in the county do transport to Front Range hospitals?
That's what's been happening in the past, although we don't have the capacity to do it. So the service that Evan is offering or planning on providing is actually going to fill a gap that we've got right now.
This keep you guys on the street or wherever.
What happens right now is the hospital will call me or our department and say, hey, we need to get somebody to Denver Health.
Right.
And they have to go by ground because insurance isn't going to approve an air ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, I say, okay, when do they need to go? And they say, well, they need to go now or they need to go in 2 hours. If they say 2 hours, they say, well, I'll see if I can get a crew together, depending on what time of year it is and if I've got all my ambulances in service. More often than not, I can't do it, so I call them back and say, no, I can't do it. Sometimes I'll call over to West Drop and I'll talk to Chief Leck or Chief Guire and say, hey, can you guys do this? And then if we kick it back to the hospital, then they're open to call. This is what Evan's talking about doing in Meeker. Now we've said we can't do it, so then they can call a service that's not licensed in Rock County to come do it. So they may call a private service out of the Front Range.
Okay.
They'll come up and transport them. Or they'll call the ambulance service based out of Centura that they have an ambulance over in Frisco, and they'll send them over here to transport.
Okay.
So what Evan's business plan is to fill the gap that we've got in North, not just in Rock County, but in Northwest Colorado.
I'm aware of it because of my husband's line of work.
Right,
yeah.
And insurance companies are becoming less willing to pay for air transport.
Yeah,
so
it's such a big cost difference.
Yeah, it's
with really no outcome or difference in outcomes.
So the key question for you, Evan, is this restriction that's being suggested by the advisory
council?
Well,
we're not talking about the restriction this year.
I understand.
Right now we're issuing a license.
So he won't be restricted in any way?
We don't have anything to provide that.
Right.
He's got a inspection that showed that his ambulance...
Just like any other ambulance.
Just like the rest of the ambulances
right.
At this point in time.
So there's going to be a little bit of a gap. But you're not, in what you're stating here at this point in time, it's not your intent to provide those kinds of emergency services, yet you would be able to in a pinch.
We would be able to, in a pinch, provide those services after discussions with the local ambulance authority, Chief Stewart.
And certainly by this time next year, you'll probably have your 800 megahertz radio ability and be able to actually do it. So this may end up just being a non-issue.
That's the plan, yes, to have those as soon as possible.
Okay.
You know, in a mass casualty event, we want to have every...
You bet.
We want every resource.
You and I are going to be running our pickup trucks and horse trailers after
that. I don't need... Yeah. T-Raj or whatever.
Are we running through these one at a time?
No, I think we can.
Okay.
You can.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature on the 2019 Route County Ambulance Licenses and Permits for Ambulances operating in Route County, according to Route County Resolution 2009-049 for North Route, Steamboat Springs, Oak Creek, West Route, Yampa Fire, 20 Mile Coal Company, and EMS Unlimited.
Second.
Any discussion? So, again, these licenses are actually 101 through 110. Is that right? No? I don't know. That's fine. Anyhow. And then we have, there's two private, two privates and the rest are public entities. 20 Mile Coal and the EMS Limited are privates, and then the rest of them are all public entities, which the fees have been waived. Isn't that correct?
The fees are waived for the public entities. Evans paid his initial licensing fee per the regulations, and 20 Mile
paid theirs.
Paid theirs, yeah.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Do you want these right now, or?
No, you can sign them, and I went off and left the permits. There's a permit for each ambulance.
Okay.
I went off and left those on sitting at my desk, so
okay.
I'll drop those back.
Bring them by, and then I'll sign
them. And sign them, and you leave them in the box, and then I take them and laminate them and get them out to the area.
That sounds okay. Good.
Great. Thank
well,
you.
We welcome to further discussion on this whole thing,
yep.
Too.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we have our 11:30 agenda item, economic development fourth quarter report update from John Bristol in the chamber. So, John, you can take off.
Great, thank you. Thanks so much for the time today. Really appreciate it to come in and update you a little bit. I've given you three different items here. One is a memo. Another one is slide presentation on the REACT Act meeting, which we'll talk about, and also the economic outlook prepared by Brian Lewandowski from the SU Lead School of Business. So there's an item in there I wanted to flag for you that I thought was really interesting. But starting with the memo, as we've talked about before, with economic development, there's always the challenge of trying to clarify exactly how it works and what we're doing. So on the bottom of the front page, you'll just see our flow chart of the 10 steps that we focus on. And it obviously starts with the three investors. That's the county, the chamber, and the city. And then it follows on from there. That's the inputs and outputs, and ultimately the outcomes, quality of life, and economic well-being. I wanted to walk through this. This really highlights and just pull out and highlight a couple items here that have happened in the last quarter and really over the last year as well. So investors, we can skip over that. Staff time, administrative time, we're good with our budget. The Economic Development Council, you can see the last couple months, the different meetings that we've had and some of the highlights that we focused on. This, most of the work, though, with the EDC has been at the subcommittee level, and specifically the Business Development Committee first through the development of this Business Retention and Expansion Program, which Megan Moore-Kemp from Yampa Valley Electric has been chairing that committee and has been tremendous help in guiding this and really developing a strong kind of culture and structure there, which is so much, offers so much help because that really leverages other resources with other people. So it's a good teamwork there, as well as moving on to the next step of developing industry cluster strategy. And so we've had conversations about what are the key industry clusters that have opportunity for growth. And we've got limited resources. Where can we focus and invest time and resources? How do we do that? Where do we go? Through conversations at the committee level, they really identified spending time with ag, creative industries, outdoor product manufacturers and designers here, as well as location-neutral employees and businesses, really a good opportunity for us. And this is really helpful for me because you start to look out across the economy and say, where do we go? What do we focus on? So having more direction and their support behind is really helpful. So, and I think it's a good. Those are good clusters to work on, and we've got key partners on the other side that can kind of take that first and second chair position on projects. Also, the Education Committee and the Public Policy Committee as well. So, has done a lot of work over the last year. When it comes to strategic partners, continue to do the work of maintaining relationships and participating in activities, obviously keeping an eye out for resources that become available and communicating where we're at and what we're doing here in Rout County. AGNC, obviously, tops that list. I think the county has an interest in that. And then, of course, Office of Economic Development. This is really important right now. Maintaining a relationship across all the different divisions in the Office of Economic Development as we look at the transition between Governor Hickenlooper and Governor-elect Polis. participated on a phone call this last weekend on Saturday, as they were kind of talking about what their process is looking for a new executive director. And after, once somebody is appointed, we want to set up a briefing with them so that we can discuss certainly the REACT Act and also Smart Goals ETF.
Who is that?
Current one is Stephanie Copeland. Okay. She made clear a couple months ago that she'd be willing to stay on board if that was possible. So, which is kind of interesting.
Can you read out those acronyms for the
debate? Sure. So,
you think she will?
No, she won't. I can't imagine. Global Business Development, and that's actually the division that I used to work in. It encompasses international trade as well as business recruitment coming into the state of Colorado. Colorado Tourism Office, the Minority Business Development Office, the Small Business Development Center. Our regional one is located down at the Vail Center here that serves northwestern Colorado, as well as the Film and TV Office, Business Funding and Incentives, as well as Colorado Creative Industries and Outdoor Recreation Office. So there's a lot of divisions in there, and trying to keep up with each of them and the resources that they have available and how we can plug into them in our local businesses. Takes a little effort there. So. And as they change, because they will change with administrations. So let's see here. Running down the list, partners. Call out. As you know, the Yampa Valley Entrepreneurship Center is a key partner for us. They really, when I'm looking at partners, they provide technical assistance to starting entrepreneurs. And so part of that, obviously, is their business plan competition. So really pleased to see the success of that and continue support of the county and others for the Entrepreneurship Center. CSU Extension has a new economic development guru, and that's Tom Johnson. He came from Wyoming, so he was leading the business efforts for the state of Wyoming and decided to move down to Fort Collins. Met him, but certainly want to connect with him further. One note here, the Craig Moffett Economic Development Council is a little bit in flux right now. The city was looking at bringing in-house economic development, City of Craig Economic Development.
They're going to decide tonight?
Yes, and they will decide tonight. So my understanding is that the Craig Moffett Economic Development Council, if the city does not do that, then they'll dissolve themselves, so which is unfortunate to hear. So the county hasn't supported them, decided not to support them this next year. So, and I think that for us, when we think about economic development in the larger region, it's hard to draw a line around the economy. So it's unfortunate to see that. So
they had some tough choices to make.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, when it comes to the budget. So I think, economic.
You know, at the same point in time, it's amazing, though, that, they can't get along and can't keep moving forward without having government funding. I mean, right, Moffat County or the city.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of...
things are tough down
there. It's tough, and there's a lot of opportunities. You know, I think that, I say this often, economic development can sometimes be seen as really research, the R&D function of government, right? It's keeping an eye out for what opportunities exist and really developing those, sometimes you have to make some investments there. So, moving on to the activities, these are the short-term unfunded activities just kind of keep an eye out for resources and jump on them whenever we can. Finished up that data-driven economic development project with Blueprint 2.0, and I shared that. I believe I sent that to everyone, and that was this email. So it's just kind of a report on the businesses. We sent it to 1,100 businesses across the entire county, did roundtables in Yampa, Oak Creek, Hayden, and Steamboat on that to develop the right questions on that, what to ask, and understand what business owners are saying. Can share another copy of that if you're interested. So, love to do more presentations on it. It's focusing more on the data so that we can make the right decisions.
Were either one of you at the city council meeting recently when they presented data that shows that per square foot our retail is really underperforming national averages? Okay.
I've heard that, and several folks to me have said
I don't
about
know.
300 square feet is the sweet spot, and much of the retail here, space here, along Lincoln specifically, is larger than that.
300 square feet?
300 square feet is ideal. And so folks will have double, triple, four times that.
Yeah.
And it's just...
300 square feet just doesn't seem like big enough to hardly do anything.
Right, to hardly any at all. But if you're able to decrease your space and utilize that space for something else and just focus on that 300 square feet for retail and find another use to activate the rest of it, it makes more sense.
Narrow focus on
that feeds into a little bit of the conversation around the alleyways that's popped up, you know, how you can have different access into buildings and be smarter about the use of the space there. So, yeah. Let's see. Film Festival had a workshop 2 weeks ago. I was able to be there for about half of it in preparation for our React Act meeting. So there is a group of 12 folks that are super interested in film and organizing themselves. So I'm excited to see where this goes. Essentially just a catalyst to get this going.
Me too. We have had a film committee as a subcommittee of the chamber for a number of years, but this has been a great opportunity to learn about what opportunities are available to us. So
there's another student 24 film hour challenge going on at the very beginning of January that Charlie Smith is throwing.
Yeah.
These things are amazing.
They are. And what they can do.
The group's going to go where the group's going to go, but I kind of wish they would do a challenge like that rather than a film festival where people come and look at movies.
Right.
And you heard those guys talk at their original meeting about how they'll let a movie consume their life for years.
Mm-hmm.
24-hour film challenge. You get the basics, and you have to produce a short film in 24 hours based on the genre you're given and a few other parameters.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes out of it is, even with kids, like,
that's, I was just going to say, the students that can put these together.
So imagine what these professionals could do.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of agonizing over it for 3 years.
Yeah.
Just spit it out.
Yeah.
Well, it's really...
see
it's,
what comes out.
Yeah, it's really fun to see this group come together and, you know, what sort of catalyst.
Because
that
didn't
catalyst
even know
that
each
will
other.
Be. And that was what's so amazing. I didn't realize that until we were sitting there at the table, that they don't necessarily know each other and they don't talk to each other. And so just bringing people together around the table to have a conversation, you know, and not... necessarily have to guide it, but they go, oh yeah, we can do this. Why don't we work together? Let's brainstorm ideas and who knows what. So, could be valuable. So we'll see. Wanted to highlight the working with the city on an adaptation study for tourism sector with climate variability. And that's a $25,000 grant that be able to pull in and run a study there on that. So the city is very interested in that. Let's see. We'll talk about the ReactX items here in a moment, a separate one. Jumping over to the programs, wanted to highlight business retention expansion. Over the last year, I've done 18 referrals for technical and financial assistance. And so, what does that look like? That's folks that are contacting me saying, "Hey, I'm struggling with this. I need this. You know, where do I go for capital?" Try and find the right fit for them, make that introduction, and it saves them that headache of running around talking to bazillion people. So, industry clusters, you can see the different ones I'm starting to focus on and tee up some conversations there for this next year. I think what's really interesting, the location neutral space is both our. We've got a co-working space here. I'd like to see more programming there that engages and really draws out the location neutral workers to identify what their issues are, and we'll potentially have another co-working space coming online here up in the base area, which I think will really add to the ecosystem there when it comes to engaging them. Under the outdoor products, did want to highlight two results working with OEDIT. Businesses that have received advanced industry export grants, nearly to $45,000 for funding. That's really to attend international trade shows and develop new markets.
Are those state dollars?
Those are state dollars, yes. And then also the Advanced Industry Accelerator Grant. So we've got one business here that just received this grant funding. So this will be helpful for them to grow their business here. So business attraction efforts. Nothing new here since last time we met. Continue to keep an eye out and work with anybody that approaches us. Looking forward to next year, though, obviously, under this, is marketing the Rural Jumpstart program. And that's building out a web page and having more of a marketing program so that we can utilize that. Partnership support. These are the key groups that that align with our strategic goals. Been working with them. Provide letters, either financial or letters of support, advocacy for them. Marketing communications. Continue to do that. We'll do that next year. Economic data collection. This one's been interesting. I'm trying to track what it is that people are looking for. A lot of it's demographic data as well as visitation data to Steamboat. So assisted 16 folks on that. Conference education, others, policies.
So there is still a trailing partner program?
There is, and so this
I
is...
I tell people that, and then I was like, I don't know if it still exists. I'll let them go to your way, yes. If you can tell them no.
It is.
Send them our way.
Send them our way. I have used it. We used it twice this year. I want to use it more. That is, there's opportunity to streamline it, make it a little simpler. Certainly make sure that folks are aware that it's there. Mm-hmm. And that
yeah, every available. Department
I think
level
that's just
kind of you guys should hire. You need mm-hmm. to let them know about
make sure
it.
That
yeah.
they know about it. So, and that's really about us getting that, you know, getting somebody's cover letter and resume out to HR managers across the country so that they know that, oh, hey, there's somebody that may be coming to town. So.
But is not on the DNR list.
Yes. some of the outcomes here is just kind of keeping track of the quality of life items that come up as well as the economic well-being. And so this rounds out the 10 steps of economic development that we focused on over the last year. Conclusions, there's some commentary here, some reports from the Federal Beige Book, which I always enjoy reading. I don't know if everybody else does. Looking to next year, this is the Economic Development Council's, I'm on page 7, Economic Development Council's goal for this next year, as well as each of the subcommittees. We spent a lot of time in the previous year developing the vision, mission, goals. Story here is staying course. We invested a lot of time this last year in developing this, and so moving into this next year, we want to stay the course and stick with what we're doing. And continue on at the subcommittee level on different projects. Really leverage everybody else's experience. On page 8, economic development metrics, this was presented at the EDC retreat. Scott Ford put these together. This is the updated one with the most recent numbers. And page 9, economic overview. Received this from our local workforce center. Christina Oxley is our new liaison there, so she's been helpful in providing some additional numbers that they have access to
she
that
is.
I don't. Yes.
Okay. Wasn't she
our
the
previous
ABC
one? She was the
time?
Chamber CEO.
Oh, she was
yeah.
mm-hmm. executive director. I don't know.
Yeah.
She
terms.
Married to Jay
Oxley.
Jay Oxley's son.
Yeah. She's married to Jay Oxley's son.
Yeah, Jay's
okay.
My age.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not sure what his son's name is.
So she's new. She's covering 4 or 5 counties, I think. So previously we had Jeff Darcy that was just focused here. Mm-hmm. And so this is a little different setup that they have now. With that, I sat down and we're going to meet for about 30 minutes. Ended up being an hour and a half. Just spent a lot of time talking about the county, businesses, and anything that we can do to help her to kind of onboard here with the county. It's really helpful. So, obviously she lives over in Craig. Why don't, before we get into the 2019 work plan, why don't we jump over to the next sheet, which is the slideshow on, or the slides on the REACT Act meetings.
What does REACT stand for?
So, rural...
Economic
assisted activity.
Sorry, gonna make it. Let me see if I can Google.
What was that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right. It was the REACT Act.
Okay.
You know, so, that they passed through the legislature this last year.
I'm sure we supported it.
Once they identified what happened in Delta, right? Because who was on first? You know, when the West South Mine and Bowie. And those mines were closing down, the question at the state level was, who's the lead, you know? And so our legislators identified that it was best to identify that. So it's called the REACT Act. It's called. So Joel is the lead on it in conjunction with the letter. So anyways, just want to run through these slides here. There's a timeline of the actions that we've taken since August. When VF made their announcement up until partially successful meeting 2 weeks ago.
Rural Economic Advancement of Colorado.
Rural Economic Advancement of Colorado.
They had to make it work.
They had to make it work.
Colorado something. So... We had
of Colorado towns.
Towns, oh. Okay. No cities, no counties. All right.
This is truncated. I'll get to the whole thing. Right.
Page two. These are the notes that that came out of the first REACT Act meeting with Dola.
Notes just towns,
city and the county of the key priorities that they have. Think we have anything new there? You're aware of that?
Yeah, that was what we asked for.
Yeah, this was the list from then. So then on page three, I threw this slide in here. That was just the real jumpstart explanation that I provided to everybody. And then at the bottom of page three is the resources. And I realized when I printed this up, this is extremely small. This is the initial resources that OEDIT has offered up. And so this is conversations with OEDIT across all their different divisions of resources that they have available. Some of them, I think, are pretty general, and they offer up to everybody, but there's some additional resources that they've
So Rural Jumpstart, if I wanted to, tomorrow, I went out and started up my own construction mm-hmm. company, Tim's Construction Company, and I hired five people from Mexico, I would have qualified?
No, because there are already construction companies here. And so you would be in competition with
and
them.
You have to pay above the average median wage in the county.
Which I'm sure you would. Sure Tim would be paying $42,000.
I mean, I don't want to
profile, but that is... How much? $42,000?
Yeah, you pay me...
$42,000.
I paid my guys $25 an hour 5 years ago.
So right. So... But the key to it is it has to be a business that's not currently operating here that would be in competition with one. So it would be new to the county. So, all
right. So are they really going to sponsor one of our outdoor companies at a trade show?
I think Luis is already talking about, I don't know how much that is already going to work.
I'm going to hold their feet to the fire.
Okay.
So yes, I have multiple emails on these. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's in writing. And my intention is to, going back to saying having a briefing with the next executive director of OEDIT, mm-hmm. And also part of what our meeting was supposed to be was the career staff was going to be coming here, and so we would have a conversation, ensure that they're bought into all of this, and then carrying that into the next administration, that they're also communicating up on what they committed, the direction they're going.
Mm-hmm. So, we're supposed to talk about two more minutes.
Okay. I do think that they did raise a lot of opportunities, or shared a lot of opportunities that are, as John mentioned, are available for anyone to apply for, but I think that they are making note that Steamboat Route County will have a higher likelihood of having grants earmarked for these different opportunities throughout the county. So I think that was kind of the message that they're really trying to support through avenues that they currently have, and then also seeing what additional they can do and talking about coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the
physically being here.
It's small, but it was important for me. And on this call on Saturday, I asked how they are questioning new applicants and how, you know, how they look to rural Colorado, and when there is an economic shock, what they would do in preparation of. And specifically, their response was, "Well, we brought up small bowl, and what's happening there in Steamboat?" And so that tells me that it's in the conversation there. So that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. I certainly appreciate that. Mr. Bonney, too. Let's see. So looking ahead on the, we were supposed to have an engagement session. It was supposed to be six roundtables. What I'm doing now with that is dividing up the roundtables, and we'll do separate conference calls and have conversations over both this month and next month, and then hopefully do a request a briefing with the new ED, and then I would like to invite the new executive director as well as a deputy director out to do some site visits. I think that that's what's to happen. So setting the bar a little bit lower on the deputy director, but we'll see. So and then continue conducting follow-up on that. So if you have feedback and insights and recommendations there, we'd love to hear them.
So which of these would be considered priorities to start with, or
sure,
how do you go about identifying the priorities? Looking to you, John.
Yeah, I to be totally frank, I think there, you know, there's no silver bullet here.
Yeah,
I think that it's scattered, kind of golden buckshot, and we've got a lot of different little things that
I'd be happy to see, you know, anything happen. So
yeah, so right. So I think that it's, you know, if we can do a little here, we can do a little here, we can do a little here. That bends the knee. So now is, you know, one single solution. No.
And we also need to identify champions. John can't be the champion for every single one of these. So throughout the community,
we need a coordinator, but we need champions too.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. So it won't. It'll absolutely be a collaboration amongst the entire community to make sure that some of these get pushed forward.
Right, and so
more than some.
Yeah, and so you can kind of go through the list of some of them. You know, I mean, anything that's coming out of CCI, obviously, Steamboat creates the largest council. Kim Keith wants them to take the lead on it. And when we're talking about some of the entrepreneurship items, the Yamba Valley Entrepreneurship Center, working in combination with our co-working spaces, you know, is important. So, but identifying each of those, we're going to have the lead on them. So,
do the hard stuff. Should we wrap up?
The one.
Are we seeing any growth in the location neutral workers, or is that static? Or how do you keep hearing that that's, you know, where we're going to see all the growth? Do we know what's actually happening there?
It's tough, right? I mean, and this is where, you know, the question is, how do you engage them? I mean, there's folks that will throw out numbers. Oh, there's 1,100 of them here. Okay, I don't know. You know?
Well, we heard the number before. It was almost like an article of faith that 11% of our workforce was location neutral workers.
Right.
I mean, who picked 11? Why not make it 10 or 15?
Right. Oh, yeah, right. Right. Because 11 sounds like somebody actually
calculated. Yeah,
right. But so
double-digit number.
Going back, thinking about cluster strategy and engaging the location-neutral employees and businesses, part of that is through our co-working spaces and having our co-working spaces that have programming that is interesting and that would entice people out of their homes and out of their coffee shops or wherever it is that they're working, so that we can really identify folks, get names, numbers, and start to build. Because we don't have solid numbers on this. And so if we can start to build that and identify who they are, names and numbers, we can start to engage with them
really
a little bit
clearer. You don't really want to. I mean, when you're running your location, you're
going to
say,
oh,
you're going to do laundry, you're going to find slippers, you're going to clean the closets. Why do I want to go to the
I know, but we want them. We want to identify them. We want to engage them. And we want to know what their needs are and how
they can
hire one more person and bring additional dollars into our county elsewhere. And so we can't do it when it's like we have no idea who they are.
That they get out of working with other people.
Right.
Emmanuel Vital tried to start a location-neutral women's group when I first moved here, and we met a few times, and then we all started having kids, and it just sizzled.
You do that. One item I did just want to flag for you to keep to think about, consider. In the economic outlook from Brian Lewandowski, the item that I flagged there towards the end is Rouse County average annual. Just as you know, there's a difference between the per capita income, which is up around $64,000, and average annual wage, which is your working wages, which is $42,500. Over the last 3 years, we've seen a decline. So in the upper range, a decline in that. And so what that means to
turn
me...
Turn the page, Tim.
Growth in tourism and loss of energy jobs.
There you go.
So, and that's where... Just want to keep an eye on that.
Yep.
And... Those are expanding higher, the goal there being expanding higher paying, higher wage jobs. And this is kind of the emptying out of the middle. So we want to keep close track.
I need to talk about secondary and third effects of that, and also consumers too, the higher wage rate.
You know, the
consumers. Exactly.
From the CCI conference, we had Elizabeth Garner, and she just made a fabulous presentation and the connection between housing starts, jobs, and the age of a community. And when she was speaking, of course, to all of Colorado, and that age group that that we're losing is in the state, statewide, is the 45 and up that are the higher wage or salary people. So the ones that are coming in are the younger ones, and they're leaving before they get to that age group. So that was an interesting presentation that she made and the conclusions that she drew.
Absolutely.
So the 800-pound gorilla, the discussion on the coal mine jobs sent over to us, and then, I don't know, it wasn't worth sending.
Do we have any real data?
No, that's, you know, I mean, if you did an economic impact study.
Well, we have real data from the assessor's office.
Right.
We can calculate pretty exactly what.
Well, we have that study about what the coal industry means throughout county.
It does, and that's.
I mean, it's dated.
There's one page on it that, so it's the, there's one page on it that references the power station, and that's it. So it largely focuses on the mines. So I think that, you know, additional understanding of that would be helpful. So my goal really right now is, you know, as I was saying, just kind of trying to get a sense of the community.
Gary
you know,
Peterson's your having, source.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, like I said, with the tax impacts, we can calculate pretty exactly.
Really?
It's the jobs that we don't really know.
We don't know
Manny employs 200 people out there.
Pardon?
Manny employs 200 people out there.
Are those employees or how many of those are subcontractors?
About 80 are full-time. 80 are full-time, but or maybe it's more than that, and then it's part additional part-times in contracts.
Okay.
So, last time it was...
Yeah, that's, I mean, those are really kind of unknown numbers.
But at the same point in time, we need to take it back to the entities that matter. I mean, we've already analyzed us, the situation. Rouse County's going to be all right. We've got Rouse County government, the town of Hayden, and the school district.
As long as you're Gallagher willing to effect. Continue to increase the mill levy on people who are out of work.
Absolutely, I would be. Yes. unless we say, well, you know, we're going to cut services and figure out which roads we're going to quit plowing. But again, I'm back. You know, we just passed that new mill levy for the school. And then, you know, I got $20 million. Our tax rates will go up five times probably if that power plant goes away for the school taxes. Because that's how big a player the power plant was in the school.
Which will be backfilled by the state.
Did you talk to Jerry Nettleton about, or Pat Soller? Not necessarily.
It's a construction bond.
Oh, on the Hayden
school.
Oh, right. Okay, you're right. That's not going to get backfilled. That won't get backfilled.
Or not.
Well, we're done.
Items here.
So we have today a resolution
appropriating sums of money, or I have resolution number 2018-081, a resolution appropriating sums of money to the various funds and spending agencies in the amounts and for the purposes that set forth below, and adopting a budget for the county of Rock County, Colorado for the calendar year beginning on the first day of January 2019 and ending on the last day of December 2019. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of the County of Rock County, Colorado, that the following sums for personnel, operations, capital, debt service, and transfers are hereby budgeted and appropriated for the revenues of each fund and or department to each fund and or department for the purposes stated below.
Okay, first off, before we go into that, so we have in the past, so we have an opportunity here, I leave it at that. So that we basically have the opportunity to pull out a line item and separate that vote on that part. If anybody has any burning desires to do such, if not, then we move through and do the whole thing on the on.
I don't want to remove anything, Mr. Chair.
I have nothing I want to pull.
Okay. So where does that go to? Does that go to this page here then?
It goes to page 8 of, it goes all the way through 8 of 8. Because each one, we appropriate by personnel operations. I just kind of summarize that whole idea by
we have different
personnel operations.
Oh, you, my page numbers are on top of it.
Sorry.
Oh, 8 of 8. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all of that one motion. So again, that's resolution 2018-081.
Yeah.
So are we going to have make the motions? Or?
No,
we
can
make
the
motion. Okay.
I can't, yeah, good.
We're not doing them individually. We're just doing...
Oh, we're just doing one.
Doing one for this whole thing.
Okay.
Through page 8 of,
yeah.
Our,
okay.
Of our paper.
But then forms. We'll have a whole bunch after that, too.
Yeah, we'll have a couple more after that.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that we approve resolution 2018-081.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 We have resolution number 2018-082, a resolution levying general property taxes for the year 2018 to help defray the cost of government for the county of Rock, Colorado for the 2019 budget year. Now, therefore, be resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of Rock County, Colorado, that for the purposes of meeting all general operating costs of the county of Rock during the 2019 budget year, there is hereby levied a total tax of 17.570 mils upon each dollar of the total valuation for assessment of all taxable property within Rock County for the year 2018. The detail for individual funds is as follows on the resolution.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. So which one of these ones is the one that you might not have all the numbers on yet?
That's next week. That's mill levies.
That's mill levies for all the other.
That's the certification of mill levies for the entire county.
Okay. Other taxing jurisdictions.
But that's just because some of the other jurisdictions are a little pokey, right?
Well, it's the calendar. Well, however you want to put that, I guess. It's the deadline is the 17th. Which is a Monday next week, and then we have it on the agenda for the 18th. So if somebody still brings it in like on the 17th, we'll try like heck to get it done for the 18th. But it depends on, you know, how many of those we have.
Right.
I think. But
are you in the afternoon in the 18th? Yeah.
Yes, in the afternoon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
By the way, were you here for?
No, he's here for the. Planning.
We probably should entertain public comment from the citizens on the adoption of the budget.
You have any comments on the budget?
Okay. And then we have one other resolution. We have resolution 2018-083, a resolution to amend a clerical error on resolution number 2017-53 adopted on December 12, 2017. To order the levy of general property taxes for the year 2017 to defray the cost of government for the county of Rock, Colorado for the 2018 budget year. Now, therefore, be resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of Rock County, Colorado, that that resolution 2017-53 adopted on December 12, 2017 shall be amended for the clerical error to read as follows.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the resolution number 2018-083.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Does that?
I guess a miscommunication.
Is Carl with?
I don't think so. No. I think Carl. Are you here for this? Prepper? Are you here for the?
Oh, it's a Rita Edwards.
It's Rita Edwards. Yeah.
Okay.
Thing.
Okay.
That's what I thought too. Okay. Okay, so let's go on. We'll start off our 1:30 planning item. First one we have is XL Hayden Station Rail Spur Construction Reclamation Bond Release. Alan, start off.
Okay. So this is a request for the release of the reclamation bonds that the county holds for the XL Railroad Spur. And this is the spur coming off of the main line going to the Hayden Station to supply coal. The county required a construction reclamation bond to ensure that post-construction of the spur, the site was adequately reclaimed and revegetated. And this bond is broken into, it's two bonds because there were two phases. One for, so as part of the construction of the rail line, County Road 27 had to be realigned. So that was one phase, and then the construction of the spur was another phase. So there's bonding for both of those phases. And all of the work is complete. The reclamation and revegetation has been done and completed. The CDPHE construction stormwater permit has been released by the state, and that was done in September 2014. And so I conducted a staff or a site visit on November 1st to take a look at the reclamation activities and the revegetation, and it looked really good. So staff is recommending that they the bonds be released.
So I just since I was here when this happened and the rest, so we had discussions about permanent decommissioning of the rail spur as well.
And so the county holds a separate bond for removal of the rail spur once the Hayden Station closes down. And that condition of approval required an engineer cost estimate every 5 years and then an update to the bond associated with that. The last estimate that we have is from 2010. So I have talked with Mark, and they are working on updating that. And so the only condition of approval that's being suggested is that this bond release, if it's approved, not take effect until that new cost estimate and associated bonding is submitted to the county.
Okay. Did that make sense? Do you understand what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I know we struggled when we allowed the rail spur when we were talking about that, you know, as well.
How would you know what the amount would how, be at that future day?
When it was going to be and how and all that stuff. And so trying to make it workable for everybody. So
why would we hold up the release of this first bond? I mean, they're already required to be doing the update of the cost of the final removal bond.
The black and white of it is they're not in compliance with that specific condition of approval. So in order to gain compliance, that's why that condition of approval is suggested.
I understand.
You got anything, Mark?
No, that's fine.
And again, yeah.
We're a little behind. We missed it as a part of the special use permit. It's kind of an older permit that we weren't paying attention to, and we should have that updated estimate probably before year end. Engineers are working on it now. So.
Well, I'm sure you're motivated to at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, the bond itself, I mean, it just costs. I mean, it costs money. It's an insurance bond.
But,
right.
Yeah. I'm good. We got them. There's a couple findings of fact.
I see that. Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the request with the four findings of fact that are in our packet and the one condition that is in our packet.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And I think you guys, I go down there quite often, Mark, and I appreciate the work you guys have done. And quality job down there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Guys, have a good day.
I'll be in touch.
So we have our second planning item, Rita Edwards Code Enforcement, C18-56.
So she asked that we call her on her cell phone to, because she didn't know how the weather was going to be, so she just made plans to attend over the phone.
I know how to run it.
You got it? Yeah.
Thanks.
I'll let her.
What's your cell?
No. 303.
Sorry, I had her on now.
901-8607.
Hi, Rita. This is Carrie Hermosinski, one of the Route County Commissioners. I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Monger. He's our chair today.
Very good.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Welcome, Rita, and appreciate your participation. So right now we'll start off on this item. So we have a issue regarding code enforcement and code compliance. And, Alan, I'll lead off with you.
Miss Edwards owns a 70-acre property west of Hayden. It's immediately east of the Hidden Springs LPS, and currently her daughter is living in an RV on the property, and staff received a complaint from Hidden Springs that she was not in compliance with the camping regulations, so staff began the code enforcement process, and the main thing that staff was looking for to come into compliance was obtaining a building permit, because once a building permit is obtained through an office policy, someone is allowed to live in an RV on site for up to 1 year, as long as they are actively working on construction of the house. And so staff, we originally got the official complaint on August 9th of 2018, and staff has been working with Ms. Edwards since then, and really didn't see very much tangible evidence of progress towards applying for a building permit. So I informed Ms. Edwards that this hearing would be scheduled and that it could be canceled if a building permit was obtained. Not just applied for, but obtained. And so that did not happen, but last week Ms. Edwards did submit a complete building permit application. So it has been deemed complete by the building department and has been sent out for review by all the applicable departments and agencies.
A building permit for what type of structure?
For a residence.
Okay.
And so because of that, since that was a major step towards coming into compliance, staff is now suggesting that this hearing be tabled pending submission of issuance of a building permit. So
it should happen within 2 weeks. Would be our normal process.
The building department tries to turn around in 10 days. That's as long as all of the other permits have been applied for and there aren't any issues, any other outstanding issues that would prevent another
plan
agency
review comments could
from signing
process
off on it. Yes, yes. So since the building permit has been applied for, as I said, staff is suggesting that it be tabled until January 8th, and that hearing then the board granting the planning director the ability to cancel that hearing upon issuance of a building permit.
So is there still access issues with issuing the building permit?
That is an issue that I have brought up with Ms. Edwards, and she has stated that she has an attorney working on that, and that the attorney has assured her that she does have legal access. So that is one of the things that planning will require before we can sign off on the building permit, and we're just waiting on submission of that documentation.
So you've set this for when, January?
January 8th.
So I guess I'm just a little bit concerned that might, if there are some plan review comments, and then they have to respond to that, it's entirely possible that the building permit will not be issued by January 8th. So I'm just wondering if we wouldn't be better off giving this process maybe a full month.
That is a full month.
Is that a full month? Oh, I guess
it's December
11th. I'm sorry.
Time flies. We're having fun here.
I suppose if we came to a hearing on January 8th and it was still not done but almost done, we could table it for another week if at that time if necessary.
I mean, so I've prepared language for a motion to table it, and I did include January 8th. You can pick another date, a later date, if you would like.
No,
well, we need to listen to see comments here, too. So, but anyhow.
So once the building permit's issued, she has 1 year that she can continue to live in that RV.
As long as she's actively working on construction.
Okay. And if she doesn't start actively working on construction in January, I mean, it's kind of hard. Not everyone wants to build a foundation in January. What happens?
We would, since there is an issued building permit, I think we would let her continue.
Wait till springtime gets started.
But that 1 year would start from the date of the issuance of the building permit.
So we try not to get down to the details as far as any construction activity and whether there is or is not construction activity. It's just the clock's running, Alan said, from issuance. So if it's on the 2nd or 3rd of January, then the year after, that's when the
clock ends. That's when she's got to
be out. So who determined that it potentially doesn't have access?
That was an issue that was brought up by Hidden Springs, some of the residents of Hidden Springs. And so because of that, I brought the issue up with Ms. Edwards so that we could try to speed along the plan review process to try to get the building permit issued as quickly as possible.
Bottom line, if she doesn't have legal access, she's not getting a building permit.
Correct.
Well, I guess the other thing that bothers me about just the January to January is, what if the building permit's issued and come June when the weather's good, she is not really in construction?
Well, I would say
then the Hidden Springs neighbors
that.
Have to still live next to an RV for another year.
Right. Well, like I said, if the clock's running, then the neighbors at least know in a year from now there won't be an RV there.
Okay.
But if construction doesn't begin until springtime, we really don't have the process to allow that RV on the site.
Now.
Until such time construction begins.
Not even under our camping regulations.
It doesn't meet the definition.
Because it's not, it can't be an accessory? Because there's nothing to
be accessory.
There's
nothing to be accessory to.
That's what
but that's not the issue that
right.
exactly, is it?
And that's the reason why it can't fit into the camping.
Right. And camping is defined as a recreational or leisure activity, and this is more of alternative housing, I would call it.
I guess you guys are here for comments.
Do you
have to come on up?
All right.
Yeah, I guess. Thank you. So, Rita, so Ms. Edwards, do you have any comments that you'd like to make?
Maybe a few just to kind of relieve people maybe a little bit. We've already put a deposit on the building. Our soil test and septic, I know our septic plans have been submitted to your environmental health. I've heard our excavation plans are already approved. When the camper went in, it was never intended to be a full-time permanent residence anyway. So I appreciate how Alan and the planning department has worked with us, and I can assure you that this build is going to take place. I do have one question. First I can talk about access. I did hire an attorney who's preparing what you need to show that we do have access, legal access for where we're going to, and you should have that within the next week. I'm having him with that, doing some other work, which I don't want to discuss, but it will include the access. What else? I do have a question. So once our structure is up and complete, what is the guideline on where I can park the camper? Can I park it anywhere on my 70 acres?
Yeah.
Okay. That was one question I had. Thank you.
I guess the question.
Is there any additional information you want from me to show our moving forward? There's already a lot of money put out to get this project completed on our part. So the plan is, as soon as the ground thaws, that the construction will start with the excavating in April and May. The building structure itself, there's some things we have to order, and that will be done probably in January. So, and I don't have any problem keeping you posted at where we're at on what step.
So I guess we're going to be happy if you just get the building permit right now, and then we move on from there. So
I fully understand. And my goal is to be in compliance. I did not know initially that guideline existed until it was later pointed out to me. So we actually moved up the construction of the home. I was hoping to wait another year, but actually moved it up in order to try to get in compliance with the county's guidelines. So, yes, we will definitely, I think our plans were all engineered plans, so we're really hoping that there won't be any corrections needed, but if there are, I do think we can get the people we've been working with to respond in a very timely manner.
Okay. You guys have any comments other than?
Yes, I do.
You need to
come on up. Yep.
So my understanding is, let's say
before you start talking, to identify yourself for the record.
Sure.
Yeah, and just be on the mic near the microphone in case anyone's listening at home.
My name is Carl Kohler. I'm a resident of Hidden Springs Ranch. I'm also the president of the Hidden Springs Ranch Owners Association. My understanding is this is a public hearing and public comment is allowed. So I thank you for the opportunity to address the board today. What I'd like to do is just provide you with some additional context to consider as you decide on the appropriate course of action to pursue. Not actually going to read every bit of this. There's a lot of information here that I think is relevant, but I'll try to cut to the chase. We're here because of what we feel is an imposition on our ability to fully utilize and enjoy our property rights to the extent that we're entitled to enjoy them. I want you to be aware that we did not file a formal complaint regarding this matter until August of this year, and we took that step only as a last resort after trying unsuccessfully for many months to work with our neighbor to find a mutually acceptable alternative. We did tell our neighbor, Miss Edwards, that it was our intention to go to the county if we were left with no other options back in March of this year. But the circumstance that actually brings us here started in May of 2017. That's when the RV was moved onto the property.
When was that?
May of 2017. And the site began being utilized on a continual basis. The RV's been occupied on a full-time basis since that time. That's over 18 months as of today and counting. I've been told that the county is generally not inclined to dedicate the resources necessary to take a hard line on the various enforcement issues that may be in play, providing that progress, even in the form of, and I quote, baby steps, is being made toward achieving compliance with the county regulations. And in some cases, those baby steps have been nothing more than unverified assertions by Ms. Edwards that, yeah, we're doing things. I've made the point that authorizing a full additional year of camper occupancy from the time a building permit is issued, assuming one's going to be issued, is essentially rewarding non-compliant behavior, and that just doesn't strike me as being right. I've been told that what's in the past is in the past, and there's nothing really that the county can do about that. You know, we waited till August to file a complaint, so that's the card that got dealt. Looking at that, you know, you can camp for 60 days. That's September, October. An extended camping permit could have and should have been applied for. It was not. I think Ms. Edwards was informed of the camping regulations back last spring, inquired about them back then, and then began kind of planning on the other option that she's pursuing today, which is, well, let's get a building permit, and that'll buy us another year. I'm skeptical of this, you know, continual construction in midwinter, as Commissioner Hermosinski asked about. Ms. Edwards just told us they have no intention of beginning any sort of work until the ground thaws out next year. All along here, the HOA has just asked for the camper to be set back from the road a little bit. We have an easement that provides us with 30 feet on either side of the center line of this road that the camper is parked immediately adjacent to. And what that means for our owners is that where we formerly were able to walk, ski, run, bike, ride horses, whatever, we can still do that. And to Ms. Edwards' credit, they have told us, yeah, you should feel free to go ahead and do that. But honestly, it feels like you're walking right through the middle of their campground, and it's just kind of an awkward situation. We've kind of gone back to using that, but it's not the most comfortable circumstance to be in. So at this point, the county's telling us that if a building permit is issued, continued encroachment of that property line and that easement is going to be sanctioned. So the bottom line from my perspective and the message I want to deliver to the commissioners is that as of today, and to get to today, we said, look, you're either going to have a building permit today or we're going to have a hearing to decide whether or not we should authorize enforcement action. But as of today, there is no regulatory justification in place that I'm aware of that authorizes the county to exercise the type of discretion that we're talking about. Camping rules have clearly been violated. No permits been issued. We seem to all be in agreement that this isn't even camping. This is just setting up some kind of an extended alternative dwelling. So those regulations simply do not apply. There is no building permit issued as of today, so there's no basis to allow continued occupation of the campsite based on that reasoning either. We're taking a pretty straightforward and simple issue, and in my opinion, complicating it beyond reason. And for what? For a non-compliant residence convenience is what it boils down to. We're talking about an RV here. It's occupied illegally. All you need to do is back up a truck, drop it on the hitch, and drag it to someplace legal. There are spots available at the State Park campground outside of Hayden. There are spots available at the fairgrounds in Hayden. There are spots available at the KOA outside of Steamboat here. There are all kinds of options for moving the camper. If they want to bring it back after a building permit has been issued, fine, bring it back. Or if they want to bring it back and make the case that, oh, now we're camping, fine, bring it back and make that case. But I just don't see any reason not to kind of take a harder line stance and compel a quicker route to compliance than what we're talking about. This campsite, it's not just a camper. They're skirting around the camper.
Have pictures?
We do, and I didn't know how much information you wanted me to bombard you with. But it's an RV. It's got skirting on it. It's got a satellite television dish. It's got a solar array. It's got a generator. It's got snowmobiles parked there. The propane tank was placed in August, and when we saw that happening, all of this discussion that we heard, which is very similar to what Rita just told you, oh, yeah, we're planning to do this, that, and the other, kind of lost credibility with us. At that point, it appeared that, you know, they're not planning to go anywhere. Our hand is forced. So there's a little bit more to the story than is available to you on the form. And whether you can take that into account legitimately or not, I don't know. But I wanted you to at least be aware.
I have two questions. Are you going to speak?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
I don't have a whole lot to say because I'm a new owner in Hidden Springs Ranch. My name is Mari Beth Cheesem, and my property is the one that overlooks this eyesore, and it feels rather creepy to me to have that in my backyard. It's not something I expected would still be there now. When I was looking at the property to buy and I looked over the hill, I'm like, oh my gosh, what is that? And I was assured that it was temporary and that it had to be moving. And I'm like, okay. So then I went ahead and bought the property, but it hasn't moved. And it's just very uncomfortable having that in the backyard where I thought it was going to be this beautiful open ravine. And then that also brings up the question, as was stated earlier, when somebody else asked, you know, can you put it back? You know, where when Rita asked, can I put it on my property anywhere? You know, so it could be put back there, you know, when all is said and done. And that doesn't really solve anything.
So we really don't control where people get to put their houses or their vehicles in. Mm-hmm. Camper, you know, so. Yeah.
So, Chad, do these alternative housing units have to meet setbacks for the gear that they're allowed to sit on property, like 50 feet off the property line?
It doesn't meet our definition of structure, which means it doesn't require a fixed location on the ground, so I would say no.
Okay.
It could be anywhere on the property.
I would comment on that, Carrie, and suggest that if whatever you're using as, in effect, a permanent dwelling, does not meet that technical definition of a permanent dwelling, that's still the intent that it's being used for. It's being occupied as a permanent dwelling. I would suggest it's totally appropriate to apply setback requirements in that instance.
We'd have to change our regulations too.
I know it would be legal to have some do that. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that's worth looking at, honestly.
I have a question for Ms. Edwards. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Did you move the RV? Did you move the property or the RV onto the property in May of 2017? Is that accurate?
I am not in any way. They're right. It was moved on there. At the time I moved, I didn't know about the guidelines.
Right. That's my next question.
I actually put a brand new RV on that site. Now, understand, I right now, just to cut to the chase, it's not even feasible for me to move that because of the snow. Plus, I should have a building permit here within the next few days. I'm going to have that permit before I can ever move it.
I just have one very simple question. When did you become aware that you had the RV there in violation of county regulation?
Not till Carl approached me, at which time then I tried working with Carl.
Was that in 2017?
To remedy it. 18.
Okay, thank you.
And I would like to state it's not an eyesore, it's a brand new camper. And I get that there are rules to follow, and I am definitely trying to do that. So over the course, I did let Carl know when we ordered our building, which was earlier this year. And that happened over 7 months ago when I ordered the building, or put the deposit on the building. And since that time, we have been working diligently to try to get everything done and plans in. And you know, it just takes time. And I'll admit, it took longer than I planned. I had hoped to have this in and have the building permit and everything by October 31st. And it didn't happen because things just come up. Now, everything is in, all the tests are done. I'm trying to comply, and I'm asking for, I guess, mercy. I don't know what else to tell you, but I don't have, I can't move the camper. It's the snow. And let me bring up one more item.
So, Ms. Edwards,
on that road.
No, wait a second. You know, can't is a pretty big word. There's a lot of everything that can be done in camp. So, again, there's snow plows and the rest to get that thing out of there. You can't tell me you can't, because that's not allowable. Can't. So, again, I guess you can continue on and tell us how you're going to comply with what we're talking about here. And I don't know whether we need to chat that much more, and I guess we need to talk about how.
I just have one. I have a couple of questions.
For Ms. Edwards.
One for Ms. Edwards. Ms. Edwards, what are you currently doing with the wastewater in the trailer?
Yes. The system, it's similar to what people that had kids. They've had. Like the diaper genie before, we put in a dry toilet. It's very similar, you know how people have kids and they put their disposal stuff into a diaper genie and then it goes to the trash.
Okay, I think
on the dry toilet.
I think I've heard enough. I think you've answered my question. Thank you.
Okay.
And then I have a question. Can I ask a question of staff? Or
sure.
To continue?
No, that's fine.
So, Chad.
It's our hair.
So, Chad, when we do have people that are exercising their rights to camp on their property, my memory is that they can do that for up to 60 days, and then on the 60th day, they need to go to environmental health and get a permit for what they're doing with their waste effluent. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So, do you have the same kind of a regulation for individuals that are in a camp in an RV on the property for a year while they're building their property?
Well, basically, we consider that type of use accessory to construction. And it's a policy, it isn't written down anywhere. Typically hasn't been a problem in the years that I've been here. But part of the planning department saying it's okay is contingent upon the building department and environmental health department saying it's okay, you know, for those reasons. Is it safe? Where's the effluent?
So presumably, during this referral process, our environmental health department would go out and check and make sure that there's adequate system in place to deal with sewage while someone's living on the property during the construction?
And living in the camper.
And living in the camper?
Right. I mean, typically there's not much. I mean, I haven't heard any complaints, so there really hasn't been cause for a site visit.
My guess is that's probably not. Doesn't really happen.
But some situations, the septic system is the first thing in, and then it's just
garden set up.
Go straight to the septic system.
Whether it's in this case or in future cases, I think when we're permitting people to live on their property for up to a year while they're performing construction work, then we have an obligation, or environmental health has an obligation, to make sure that there's an adequate system in place, or that we can at least certify that the RV is being driven to a dump station every 30 days.
Or having a commercial pumper come.
And I would say it's a similar, if not the same, review that would be done on the 180-day camping permit.
Yep. Okay.
So we need to follow up. We'll need to follow up that with environmental health.
Yes.
Have staff, planning staff, and environmental health talk to each other about that, you know, concern.
Sure.
It's a valid thing. I mean, that's why
we have been.
Brought up the whole thing anyhow.
So I just have a couple of comments after we get a motion on the table. And I was just going to make a comment to Mr. Kohler. It would have been helpful if you could have gotten this information to us prior to the meeting. It would have been nice to have seen your comments and some of the photographs. And that's fine.
Yeah.
We're gonna give it consideration just for future reference or anybody else that's listening. The sooner we get this information, the more time we have to digest it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We weren't even sure this hearing was going to take place, okay, to be quite honest with you. And we have shared some information with the plan.
Okay.
Any other questions? Or
I guess we're a public comment.
Anybody else have any comments on this?
I'll lead off here a little bit to facilitate what we need to talk about. So, again, I was a little concerned originally that the eighth was, you know, and I think we started off maybe in this conversation, the eighth, you know, January 8th, and whether that's appropriate and the rest. I guess, you know, and back to your comment, Carl, Mr. Kohler, as well, as you know, we still have, you know, discretionary prosecution as well. So, I mean, that's kind of us, and you know, the magnitude of the problem, that's why we're a complaint-driven situation as well. And it's not, but it doesn't foster, well, it probably does foster, you know, some activities that aren't totally kosher as well. So I guess my concern here now, and then is, first off, is the eighth enough time? And we do need to set some hard and fast deadline for it to happen. And then I guess my question would be, why don't we, since we have to have a hearing for it anyhow, I think I would be in favor of having potentially a motion and directing staff to pursue that effective of the date and not have to bring it back again.
I don't know. I mean, I think we could conceivably authorize legal action right now.
That's what I was driving to. And then put that date in there somewhere. And if the date has, if the specific activity has not happened by that date, we've already approved the moving forward of the enforcement.
Yeah, answer your concern, I agree with you. Somebody could. It could be moved, regardless of what Ms. Edwards says. But the reality is, if we authorize legal action today, we'd be more than 30 days out from actually being able to enforce anything, correct?
Oh, yeah. We'd have to file our papers, and then there's a time for the right to cure.
Which is all the more reason to go ahead and authorize legal action today.
And then have a tipping point or whatever.
Which is probably the best that we can do at this point in time to address your concerns. And you made the comment that somebody had told you that what has happened in the past is in the past. And unfortunately, that has some truth to it. There's only so much that we can do starting today. And I guess it's an open question whether, you know, you might think that planning staff should have acted more aggressively subsequent to your complaint on August
9th.
August 9th.
This is pretty quick for this county to receive a complaint and actually go and get the motion in the district court.
Generally speaking.
Although you guys have been dealing with it for a year and a half now.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that staff has made an adequate effort to try to follow up on this. I mean, look at the timeline and the number of times that they've contacted Ms. Edwards and worked. And in fact, progress has been made. But of course, we can't guarantee that that would get to the finish line.
Well, it sounds like we're all in agreement to authorize the moving forward.
Yep.
And again, I guess...
And none of that really bears on what Ms. Edwards' process.
No.
We don't even need to...
And hopefully we don't have to exercise anything.
I mean, we wouldn't even have to have another hearing on the 8th of January.
No.
We could just authorize legal action, and Ms. Edwards presumably would be motivated to get something done.
So I can make that motion.
That sounds good.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that... we authorize legal action in this matter, the Rita Edwards Code Enforcement C-1856, and that'll be self-executing that legal action will commence if a building permit is not issued by January 8th.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, I'd just like to sympathize with you folks. Difficult situation. I know we went through some serious struggles when we imposed our camping regulations a few years ago, and it's really hard when we work to balance the individual property rights. You guys obviously have property rights. Ms. Edwards has property rights, but I think we're all in agreement that taking advantage of an alternative housing situation is simply not appropriate in this county, and we need to work within the regulations we have. So we'll do the best we can from here.
I appreciate that. Any other discussion? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Aye. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Edwards.
Okay. Goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. All right. See you, Carl. See you later.
Fox Grove final subdivision plat, subdivision improvements agreement, and the zone change resolution. Alan, we'll start off with you.
So this is for the Fox Grove subdivision. There are several requests in front of you. The first one is authorization for the chair's signature on the final plat. Once all of the other signatures on the plat have been obtained, the plat has been reviewed by the county attorney. And then the second request is...
has been reviewed. Has it been approved?
It has, yes.
Okay, thank you.
The second request is authorization of the chair's signature on the zone change resolution, changing the zoning from agricultural forestry to general residential. That resolution has been reviewed and approved by the attorneys as well. And then the last item is in relation to the subdivision improvement agreement. So we'll be asking for authorization of the chair's signature on that agreement as well. But prior to that, there needs to be some discussion on the surety that the county is required to collect on the infrastructure, the improvements that were installed as part of this subdivision. So the zoning regulations require that 125% that a engineer cost estimate of what it would take to install all the improvements be submitted, and then the developer is required to post a bond in the amount of 125% of that engineer cost estimate. And then once all of the improvements or individual improvements have been installed and the county has preliminarily confirmed that those improvements have been installed, then the county can release that surety money for those improvements minus 10%. And the zoning regulations, it only mentions the improvements that are required by the county. The applicants are making the case that those improvements should be separated into two categories, private improvements and public improvements. The public improvements are those improvements that the county is accepting, and so mainly the work that was done in the right-of-way for the driveways, to access these lots. Other public improvements are the water and sewer infrastructure, but since those are part of the city system, the city has a separate agreement to cover the warranty for those. So in this situation, the public improvements would be limited to the work done in the right-of-way. And then all of the private improvements include...
So you said the private improvements that the county required. What private improvements did we require for the private?
Roads, street signs, landscaping, utilities, the reclamation and revegetation of the disturbed areas associated with that work. There's a list in the draft agreement. Drainage systems, survey monuments. And then there's water quality monitoring during the construction of the improvements and engineer supervision of construction. Again, the fire hydrants, the water utilities, and the sewer utilities are covered under the agreement that the developer has with the city. And so it's staff's position that since the regulations don't make a distinction between private improvements and public improvements, and that the regulations require 10% of the surety be retained during the warranty period for those improvements, that...
So first off, you didn't get into the fact that I think he didn't bond for any of this, correct? He went through and did the construction and accepted the risk himself for the construction.
Yeah, so he got the approval for the final subdivision, and then that allowed him to start work on installing the infrastructure. The only time that an SIA was required prior to installation of the improvements is if they want to file the plat and be able to start selling lots associated with that plat.
Is the infrastructure in?
It is.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Did the city end up getting some kind of bond on the water and sewer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just the water and sewer?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Not anything with electric, natural gas?
No. No. And staff is not suggesting that we collect warranty surety money for those utilities, because the developer has paid the utility companies to install that infrastructure, and once that happens and the...
So they're at risk for that.
The utility companies are on the hook for any problems.
Defects.
So practically speaking, from our perspective, there's no issue with water, sewer, natural gas, and electricity.
Correct. So the staff is looking for direction on how much warranty surety should be required for entering into the SIA. And then the second...
How much are we talking about? 10% on what, anyhow?
And would it be on all the rest of those items on the list, not including water, sewer, electric, and natural gas?
No, it would be everything through the warranty period. We retain the 10% through the warranty period for all of the improvements.
So page 23 of your packet is where it starts the engineer cost estimate. So page 23 is... 23 is all of the public improvements, so that the 10% of the public improvements would be $7,735, and there's no dispute on whether that should be required. Then on page 24 and 25 is the engineer cost estimate based on 0% warranty for private improvements and then a 10% warranty for private improvements. So there are a few outstanding private improvements that have yet to be installed, so they are including the 125% for that, and that is $1,030. And then if 10% warranty for the private improvements would be required, it'd be $50,920.
And the private improvements are the gas and electric?
The private improvements are the roads.
Okay.
Roads, grading, drainage.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And we're talking about setting this money aside for a year?
For a year. Yes, sir.
So that's
what we're looking at.
Page 25 or page 26 is this $58,655.
And that is the number that staff believes, based on the regulations, should be accepted.
And the applicant is proposing that we not require that.
Well, they're proposing this $87,65.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
Correct. For that.
So can we hear from the applicant?
Yep, please. Yeah. There you
let's
go.
Hear their pitch.
Sure. There's two things, as Alan mentioned, and he did a good job explaining it. The warranty surety for the private improvements that aren't going to be accepted or maintained by the county, we'd like to, you know, Bill would like to have that. The county consider not requiring that. And in support, one, he has a warranty from Native Excavating on all the work that's been completed, including the revegetation, for a year, that they're responsible. Secondly, and Bob might be able to explain this better, but as soon as the plat's recorded, the homeowners association by covenant then has the responsibility of maintenance as well. So you've got two entities that are responsible for maintenance for the next year.
But at this point in time, the homeowners association is him, right?
Yes. So, yes, he hasn't, until he sold the lot.
Yeah, because we haven't signed the exactly.
Right. And thirdly, just for reference, when we were involved with subdivisions in the city of Steamboat Springs, the city also does not, they do not require warranty surety on private improvements. They do certainly on public improvements, which is why we've already provided surety to the city for the water and sewer. And then the second item, and Alan, jump in if I'm explaining this incorrectly, but on the revegetation, let me jump back for a second. All the work's complete with the exception of street signs. And the CenturyLink installation has not been completed. Bill's paid YVEA, CenturyLink, all the utility companies. Everybody else has installed their utilities. I can't guarantee that they have made all the necessary connections, but they've been paid the fees. All the infrastructure's in, except for CenturyLink. All the conduits in the ground, but they have to make their terminations and, you know, bring the system live. But we're just waiting on them to do that. So as far as the revegetation goes, I think what Alan's looking at it is, until we can establish that we meet the revegetation requirement of 70% regrowth, which is, I think, what we're using, he feels that the revegetation hasn't been completed and doesn't want to necessarily release any surety on that. From Bill's perspective, he's gone through and basically expended all the costs and had the contractors go out there and do all the work this fall. We actually got the work done before snow cover. They did some irrigation. We got a pretty good growth already.
Are you saying, though, that Native has given Bill or a warrant, Bob,
or a guarantee and a warrant, yeah.
On that revegetation?
Yeah.
That's a year long?
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, I don't think it's necessary for us to force someone to go to the expense of warranting it twice. So can you provide a copy of that warranty? To satisfy the
yes.
requirement?
Yeah, copy of contract is what it would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can give you that.
Okay.
And Native Excavating isn't concerned about any proprietary interest in their contract in public document?
We'll, if we have to, we'll give you a separate warranty.
Or redacted.
I'm sure we can get, like, a written warranty.
Why do we require surety on private improvements?
Well, we don't do this very often.
And we don't have a very good track record.
Because they are required improvements to make a lot buildable.
Bob? So we've said these are roads, these are driveways.
Yeah.
So
so they're not public then? They are. I mean,
well,
some of them are public.
They're private access to the lots.
To the subdivision.
To the subdivision.
And we're not taking any of the roads.
You're not taking.
No, I understand that, but they're public. People can.
No, it's still private property.
Is it going to be marked as private? Private drive?
They're private drives, yeah. And they're public. They're not. There's no public access.
Like, I don't have to mark my driveway in town as private. It is private.
Yeah, it's just a shared driveway.
Got it.
Okay, so this is actually an interesting issue. I mean, sort of the theory of this, I think, was way back when, you know, the logic of these things is the government's going to accept maintenance responsibility, water, sewer, roads, whatever. We need a warranty period to make sure this stuff's built right. Okay. And we've had kind of, you call it warranty creep, okay, where now we want warranty on private improvements that we don't have to maintain. It's kind of like, I guess it's sort of like maybe consumer legislation.
But the city doesn't do that.
The city does not do it.
Right.
But at the same point in time, we didn't have warranty creep when we did Stagecoach.
But Stagecoach were public improvements.
Yeah, but all still those private drives, you know, and all that. So we didn't even get the roads done.
Well, yeah, but that's because I don't know what happened there. You had a bond expire or a letter of credit or something. I mean, I don't know what the problem
is. Well, there's a difference. There's a stage structure. A lot of those roads are, in fact,
those are public streets.
That's right.
Well, that's
and
right.
These are, that's the distinction.
Yeah, that's the distinction I'm making. I mean, I'm not saying that there is some logic to it, except we've said to you, we've got a warning from the contractor, and the HOA is responsible contractually. And you could make the same argument a year from now. The HOA is responsible then. What's the difference in that year period? It's just a question of time.
I would have a tendency to say question number one, accept the $87.65, and question number two, to get the warranty from Native as the warranty.
You know, I mean, I'm generally sympathetic to that. I'm really worried about whether we really have the latitude to do that.
You have alternate collateral that can accept.
What I would say, I'd kind of put aside the public or private and just focus on whether or not the board decides it's essential infrastructure or not, whether that's the infrastructure that you need to convince you to approve a plat to create buildable lots.
But this is, I know this isn't an affordable neighborhood, but it's these little questions year over year over year at both the city and the county building that work against affordability in the city of Steamboat Springs. Why are we going to make them go, I mean, we're belt and suspendering everything. Why can't we just belt
them? But I'm saying that if we're going to defer to somebody else for the installation or the maintenance of some of this, what we deem now as essential infrastructure, then I would say we need to redefine what we deem, what we call a buildable lot. Because right now, it all goes back to what the regulations deem as buildable, what you guys approve as buildable.
Well, if we're going to sign the plat today, it's going to be buildable. Is it not?
Right. I mean, that came along with the approval specifically of the preliminary.
Somebody's checked off that the improvements were complete. Everything is complete and ready to go. We're talking about the warranty on the completeness.
Right.
And the workmanship and the rest.
Well, the stuff's not actually complete right now.
Yeah, it is.
No, it is.
It's all done.
But if it breaks the workmanship,
exactly.
So in the issue with, you know, reclamation or whatever the issue was with,
and I understand the reclamation
native excavation or whatnot,
right? Because it might not grow.
So if a construction company says, no, we'll take care of it, is that good enough for the county? Because in the past it hasn't been, because we want
for
to
private
make
improvements,
sure.
Yes.
Again, essential infrastructure or non-essential infrastructure. I think those two words should be used instead of public.
Essential home.
To creating a buildable lot, approving a buildable lot. I mean, because if, let's say we had landscaping regulations, and the regulations said you have to have 5 trees, and the developer says, well, we're going to do 10 trees, then we shouldn't be involved. The other 10 trees are not essential. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't really have to do with creating, you know, a buildable lot.
But it's a question that you're going to get a warranty provided, copy of the warranty that
yeah.
provided
Jeff.
By the contract.
Yeah.
One thing on the revege that might make you feel a little bit more comfortable too. So this project was big enough that we had to have a stormwater discharge permit through the state because there's over an acre of disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
So as part of that permit, we can't get that permit released until we have demonstrated that we have established like 7% vegetation regrowth. So it's going to be in everybody's best interest, Bills, natives,
everybody. So we got another
everybody.
Player regulating as well.
Exactly. So native can't get that permit released until the vegetation is established. So you've got kind of another check, if you will.
I'm going to go with, I think we need to get a copy back. Again, my biggest fear would be the veg and making sure we don't have all weeds come up there and not taken care of. And I guess we'll send our weed guy out if we
have. Yeah, I suppose we have a check on that as well.
Yep.
I mean, I guess the biggest risk, it feels like, would be the erosion control, actually.
Yeah. You have to have water to do that. But.
You ready for a series of motions?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Mr. Chair, I move that we authorize your signature on the final plat.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Mr. Chair, I move that we authorize your signature on Zone Change Resolution 2018-084.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 And, Mr. Chair, I move that we authorize your signature on the SIA and note that as to question number one, we'll be taking a guarantee in the amount of $8,765. And with issue number two, vegetation, we're going to accept a copy of the warranty that Native has provided as satisfying that requirement.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Very good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
What, if I get the plat in, can I get... record by next week, Alan? Is that feasible?
One of the conditions of approval from the final says everything has to be recorded all at once.
Well, I know everything. I've got everything.
Okay. I still need to look over the agreement, make sure everything's exactly how it needs to be. Have Eric look over it, and then I can send it to you for.
I mean the SIS.
Yeah, for signature.
Is this the appropriate time to talk about that the revegetation item in the SIA? Or, you know, because my concern is that if you don't include that as part of the preliminary acceptance, are we going to have to? So right now, that's shown in the SIA as being it's an outstanding completion item, the revegetation. The application's all been done. The seeding and mulching and everything's all been done. If we wait until 70% regrowth and we say, okay, the vegetation is now complete and now we'll preliminarily accept it, then that, I mean, maybe it's not an issue if we're not posting surety for it, but then does the acceptance period of that go for another year? Because we'd like to have all of this, you know, by next fall, we'll know. And
I mean, based on the motions here today, I would say that would get moved to preliminarily accepted because we're not accepting any surety for that.
Okay. And that's not fine.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff?
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
See you.
I forgot a clean copy of the resolution.
That's fine. You can bring it. If you were going to record them all together, maybe just bring them all together. Are you recording?
Okay. Because the plat probably won't be, they still need to send that out for signature, so that might
Don't
be
wanna,
for another
it
week.
It depends whatever you want to, whatever you need to have done.
Okay.
So we let Sarah know it's in here, and I'll,
I'm in damn near every day, so.
So does it, I guess I'm concerned with the numbering of the resolution on your form versus when it gets recorded.
Oh, no, its numbers assigned.
Its numbers assigned.
084.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. All right.
That's its color.
Okay. Sounds good.
Very good. Have a seat, guys.
Peter, on.
Yep.
Good to see you.
Sit here.
Well, I'm Jack.
Jay,
nice
again.
I'm Doug. Jay, Stranger. Okay, we're still on record here. We're
use your radio voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Somebody's dialing in to look at you, so you go. So it's you guys' floor. So have at it.
Okay.
Our
purpose today is just to let you know where search and rescue stands. We've got a lease expiring. Actually, I think it's expired and been extended a little bit.
Yep.
And we'll be renegotiating that.
This is lease. For the District 3 shop, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. We just wanted you to be aware of what we use the building for and how important it is to us for the terms of that lease. I think the only thing we're concerned about right now is we've been informed that the lease that the county will be proposing is going to be much shorter than the previous. Previous lease was 25 years, and unless things have changed, the figure we've been giving was maybe 5 years or a little more. The concern we have is that that barn is critical to us. We have our little training room and offices down on Yamba, and you might be aware that there was, years ago, there was an
attempt.
We're
all aware.
Yeah. Okay.
We're well aware.
Okay. And
someone wants you to move.
It's, you know, and it's made us a little gun-shy, you know, that could happen again with that property. And if so, then our only, you know, recourse for having a training room and offices and places to run a mission would be that upper barn. The county property we call the upper barn. Even without it, the barn is pretty critical to us right now. I think you can kind of elaborate on what
sure,
you're
sure.
For.
Both of our facilities are extensively used. We don't have any spare room at our lower barn. We don't have any spare room to speak of at the upper barn. The upper barn is the county property that we're talking about here. We currently store our snowcat there, a Ford Excursion with a trailer that has four ATVs on it, and in the wintertime currently it switches out to snowmobiles. Those are extra snowmobiles. We also have some down at the lower barn. Our full fleet of 8 ATVs are up there. We have quite a bit of workspace that we use. We keep everything on battery rechargers, so all of that equipment is kind of filling that space, if you will, right now. However, we do use it for more than just storage. I can think of 4 different times in the last year that we've had to move out of our lower barn, either for construction purposes on Yampa or event purposes. If it's the Mustang Rally, the Corvette Rally, things like that, they'll ask us to move our vehicles out. So we store them at the upper barn at that point, and that's where we respond to if we have a call. So it's a very important backup facility for us in those terms. As we've mentioned, the city has talked about taking that lower facility away from us. So that's why it's very important to us to kind of have that as a backup, something that we could use for all of our equipment and for our meetings in the short term while we've got something figured out going forward. The other thing is right now we are financially stable. We operate in the black. We don't have really any debt to speak of. If one or the other of those properties goes away, that changes. We would have to finance a new facility. We simply don't have the funds to outright purchase new land or a new building or both. That would change the dynamic for us in terms of grant writing. We get a lot of our funds from DOLA, it's the Department of Local Affairs. They require financials when they're giving us grants. We've had a few other grants over the years that we've written that also require us to be in good financial standing. As well as the county. The county is always looking at what our balances are. We get a certain amount of our funding through the county as well. And they're always concerned that we keep operating in the black. So this is why going forward, we think it's important to kind of push that lease out as long as we possibly can, so that we know that we will have ample time to finance a new facility, to find a new facility. That's about all I can think of.
In terms of the lease, our wish list for Christmas is maybe a 25 to 30 year lease to just extend and duplicate what was done before. We're open to that. Frankly, 5 year lease scares the hell out of us because that goes in a blink of an eye. So I think that's about it for what we wanted to bring forward to
today. That's your major concern is the life of the lease.
Exactly.
You don't have any other big
issues. So you have utilities up there?
We have electricity. Mm-hmm. That's it.
And is it on our meter, or you guys have your own meter?
I believe that
we recently confirmed. It is in the lease that they pay the utilities, and we recently confirmed that they are paying the YVEA bill.
So what if we just float this idea?
And again, we need to talk here a little bit about it. Go ahead.
So, I understand why you want 25 years. You can understand why we want to limit that length of time for keeping our options open. What if we revisited this 5-year lease every year?
Every year?
We can't get it revisited in time for 25 years.
I mean, from a practical perspective, I don't think there is a county commission or a city council that's going to kick search and rescue out of the nest. And when you guys were talking about Yampa Street, anytime I've heard any discussion about moving search and rescue off Yampa, I think both bodies understand that there needs to be a comprehensive plan for where does search and rescue go. You know, if fire and search and rescue are moving off Yampa, do they go to the District 3 shop? Are you guys have new space in the new fire building? I mean, I've always only ever heard concern in both entities, serving in both entities, about having a good relationship with search and rescue. I think you're viewed as a core function by both bodies. So,
one for us.
From a private perspective, I don't think you
kind
should
of work under
about
the guise of the sheriff as well.
I think unless there was something, catastrophic that we really needed a ton of space at the District 3 shop, then I think there would be an effort by whoever the county commissioners are to say, well, where do we put search and rescue? That's my perspective.
There is a clause in that lease.
And it's hard for governmental entities to say, we'll give you 25
years. But that's under the terms of the lease.
Mm-hmm.
Within the lease.
And we would certainly like to see that.
And this was definitely written very tenant friendly.
What's wrong with my idea?
Every year?
And I read a lot of leases.
We have a 5-year lease.
Yeah, you could.
We come back
every
year.
You're probably an eighth grade.
Extend it for a year. It would basically be a formality.
So that's
they
even,
would have a 5.
That's
year.
Even worse than you're not. You're talking about an annual renewal.
Yeah.
We could
no,
take
I'm
away
saying that, I'm saying that it would be at their option every year.
You know, we hardly. You know, we've never. You know, it's been a lot. You guys need to keep comes to updates. So it's every once in a while. Whether you even come with sheriff's updates, just to let you know, let us know how you're doing, because you do. You work under the guise of us, and somewhat. And I don't know. You're your own 501c3 and the rest, but you work under the auspices of the sheriff. So.
This is a very
tenant-friendly lease, by the way. I mean, this is not something that I would ever say that the county should sign. It's too tenant-friendly.
I can totally understand why they'd be nervous about having a 5-year lease, and then you go through the 5 years and you show up and say, hey, we want another 5-year lease, and the landlord says, no, we're done.
Oh, I understand that, too.
So why not extend it every year?
We'd have the same clause that we do in here now. There has to be a notice of an intent to terminate the agreement. And, whatever you want to do. I mean,
So I'm not sure that 5 years is a good year. We've already been told by legal that 25 is not what we want to have. So, you know, I think we need to have some further discussion about what we want to have and what, you know, and again, it's in our best. If we don't provide you a place with your volunteers and your manpower you bring to the table, somehow we're going to be sending our sheriff deputies out there to find these people as well. So, you know, that's not in our best interest either. We appreciate the volunteer base you guys bring to the table. So it's in our best interest to help you succeed as well, to continue to succeed. So I just think we just need to, I mean, if that's the issue right now, I mean, we've been having the discussions about when, with the county manager and us, about what happens when you get kicked out of Yampa too, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been really worried about that too, and what that puts additional pressure on us, you know, out of the city kicking you out.
And ensuring that the city has some financial commitment to helping.
Yeah, we've
sure
really been
happens.
Working on yeah. that part of it. Yeah, making sure you guys just can't go kick them out of that place and not provide them some type of replacement for it because you can sell it. And so it's been in our interest to do that.
And I know that that's legally ambiguous if the city can even do that. But
still, I still feel, maybe Eric, help me out here. I still feel like there ought to be able to be a way to write a 5-year lease, and that at the end of the first year, unless we give them notice that we're going to kick them out at the end of the fifth year, it automatically extends for another year.
Even then, we can say you've had a 5-year lease, and you have a 2-year notice or a 3-year notice too to kick them out. I mean, not that.
Yeah, I can understand.
Our concern is that, you know, just like this thing here, Mr. Bell signed this back in 93. Okay, well, what kind of baggage do we bring when, you know, or what kind of baggage do we leave when we sign the agreement and negotiate the agreement and who gets left with it as well? So, Mr. Eric.
So, please understand that. Everything I've heard has been very favorable to search and rescue and wanting to accommodate and get this partnership and relationship moving forward. 25-year lease is extremely unusual, especially when there's little to no consideration there from a legal perspective. It's neither here nor there for me. I think the county and search and rescue need to work together. But maybe there's something we can do. Of course, you can do that. You can write it that way. It sounds like it may be more complicated than it needs to be. We have other... there was a reason why 5 years was chosen in our discussion. It had to do with the road bridge plan out at that property.
Yeah, I remember the details. I'm not really familiar. We don't have a plan other than the building.
Well, we don't need their building. We have plenty of room out there where we could build our own buildings up there.
Yeah, I don't want to do what somebody else might be doing. So
yep, I get you.
Right now, I think we've written off that space for right now.
I would.
It's off of, yeah. It's, I mean, it's basically off the table for future development.
We need to develop a master plan for the use of our property up there for road and bridge purposes. And then how does that fit in with the search and rescue? And are the Board of Commissioners okay if the city does decide to kick you out of Yampa Street? Is Rock County okay with some city funding for a new building that is built up there on our property? I mean, that's sort of a longer term plan that ought to be somehow commemorated with master plan for what we would use our property up there.
And, you know, and maybe not too. I mean,
yeah, whatever.
You know, the next thing. Well, when we want the gun shop or the rifle club out there at where it's at, that might be the next place. Just keep moving it out of town a little bit farther with everything.
So there's no intent to get rid of search and rescue or that spot. 5 years seem to add flexibility in case your long term plans change, and then. I mean, I think the way that lease is written is that search and rescue can leave at any time. And then but there was some discussion about what the county is going to be doing on the property. And you're aware Verizon's building a tower up there. Yes and no. We think next summer.
They've got a permit.
We think next summer. So, you know, just things change and needs change. We were at one point looking at buying another building, the pilot building, for use by the Road and Bridge Department, at least partly. So
we also looked at the TIC Training Center right on the other side as well.
Yeah.
The 5 years was thought of more as just a flexibility. What if the county's needs change? Again, there would be a desire to accommodate search and rescue in some fashion.
5 years could be extended.
That's what I'm saying. Is that we sign a lease with these guys on January 1st of 2019, and for 5 years. And on January 1st, 2020, it automatically extends for one additional year unless we give them notice, 5 years notice, that they need to move out. That way they would have a rolling 5-year knowledge that they've got a home. Worst case scenario, we're giving them 5 years notice.
And that's fine. I'm happy to draft it that way. But just so you know, as the client, that locks you in for 5 years as well. So yeah. If you
if I'm comfortable on January 1st of 2019 of having these guys in place for 5 years, which I am, then I can revisit that every year on January 1st of 2020. I go, am I good for another 5 years? Yeah, let's just let it automatically roll over.
Yeah, that's a little outside of the strategic planning goals of 4-year planning. Just so you know.
We can accommodate.
We've been on the outside of the...
So I guess the other thing, I'm fine with the 5-year automatic renewal or a 5-year termination thing, too, you know. Then we'd have to give a 5-year termination to them. And I guess the other question is, if we give them a 5-year termination, it's a walk away, and we get the building. Is that... That's the question, too.
I suppose we could do a 5-year termination underneath the 25-year lease. Or under a 100-year lease. We always retain.
I mean, that's what they're. That's what they're.
To give them 5 years.
Five year. No, I mean,
15 years.
But I would think.
I mean, that was the intent when they. If this thing terminated, they could walk away, and the building stays there. That's ours.
Search and rescue could walk away at any time under the terms of that lease,
and the building stays.
And we don't really care about the dollar a year. So we don't care at this
point. That's the consideration.
It's not a, yeah.
It's required.
We're not marking that down as a capital asset.
But I guess I have a question for you guys. If we can come up with a way to provide you a 5-year assurance so that you're not running through a 5-year lease and then coming back and having the county say, hey, you're out of here.
In a month.
Right.
For a year.
I think I understand the intent of the board is essentially, if I'm getting it right, is to allow search and rescue to have at least 5 years of planning ability for use of the building.
Yes.
With that, I think that's sufficient to talk
with that.
A little bit more.
This is easy for me to say, but I mean, from a political perspective, if either the city or county tries to throw you under the bus, you know the room's going to fill up with people.
Oh, yeah. And again, for us, we understand the relationship you have with the sheriff and what we feel is critical. And again, for me, if you're not out there doing it, we're going to be sending people out there. So
yeah, we're responsible for this under any set of circumstances.
So, well, the sheriff, don't admit too much.
The sheriff. And we have to find what the sheriff has to do.
Okay, so that's it. We gave direction.
As a representative of the group, I think it's safe to say that what you're proposing is really adequate. So we always know we're going to have at least 5 years if we have to make a change for the future. That's more than enough. Whatever lease you come up with, you're the landlord. We'll sign it.
We want $2 a year.
Double the rent.
No, three.
Well, we're going to go back and make sure you made that payment every year. Otherwise, you're in trouble.
Are you all right?
Sure. Yeah, we can talk more about from a practical aspect of how that works.
Yeah, put it in with legalese.
Sort of an auto renewal versus it being triggered somehow. I mean, you're right. This one lapsed. You know, so yeah. We tend to sometimes forget about what we have out there. although Sue has a contract tracking system.
Trigger list, yeah.
I'll get a razzing.
Been waiting for it.
Got to admit, until you contacted us, we had no idea that it was expiring.
A little moment of panic there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, who's watching the ship?
First conversation we had, we were talking about different places. He was talking about Yampa. I was talking about District 3.
Yeah. You know, we bought that property at Elm Creek. Taking a permanent location for search and rescue.
That's not big enough. Okay, I think we're done.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So, I just...